Quiet on set means quiet. And we're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm one of your hosts, what? Jefferson J. Thacker. Also, sorry, words.
This is not No Direction Beyond,
apparently. So, it was supposed to be. Today was supposed to be No Direction Beyond. I have everything planned.
Special edition of No Direction, the Pathfinder, the No Direction Network's Pathfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. And I'm joining us on an off week. I'm Ryan Costello.
Welcome, Ryan. So which
and you are?
And I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer, who's supposed to be here.
And I'm Param. And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param. So which species did you write for Create Demi Planet, Ryan?
The Shabadoos.
Ooh, I like that. We might need to steal that.
The Shabadoos. We're gonna that's gonna be canon. You know, I hope all of you Pathfinder people who watch our Starfinder podcast, No Direction Beyond, realize how important that the canon of that word Shabadoo is.
We could get back to the Shabadoos in the future at some point. Param, why am I here? Why is this a No Direction Prime instead of No Direction Beyond?
Okay, so we have been teased that there was going to be some big news soon-ish for Pathfinder, and so much so that we even postponed last week's episode to Friday for 194. And I'm not even numbering this one yet, so this is No Direction special right now. We'll decide if it becomes 94.5 or 95. 94.5 sounds like a you know, an oldies rock radio station.
It does. What if it's 194 second edition?
Oh.
I like it.
This is why he gets paid the big bucks.
Yeah. This is why Costello makes the big dollars at the No Direction Network. Mm-hmm.
And there has been an announcement. The big announcement we've been waiting for is here. The product lineup of second edition has hit. We now know all the stuff that's going to be coming out on August 1st. There are some surprises in store, some details that caught us off guard, a lot of fun things, and overall, good news for people that are hyped for second edition. This is a lot of the things that we have said on the podcast several times that we would been hoping for that they would do, and so we're really ready to tell y'all. And Ryan knows none of it, because Ryan, right. Why do you know none of it, Ryan?
Because I have a life. I left work at 5. I went to see Ralph Breaks the Internet with my family, and I was just finished putting Scarlet to bed, and in that time everyone else had 4 hours to digest second edition. I am vaguely aware of the highlights, which we're going to be talking about.
Ryan got like home, and then his phone exploded, and he was like, "I can't do this right now, guys."
I know. I was like, special episode, and then Ryan was like, "If you prep," so I totally did the prep and wrangling. And Alex decided to thankfully join us, and James and Alex did not mutiny and take over the podcast and keep their spot. So thank you, James. Thank you, Alex, for, you know, giving us the time to talk about this, so that we can get there right as the news is breaking and be super relevant.
Sure. We just now officially get an IOU card, which means when they pull something like this on us for Starfinder, we get an IOU. Isn't that right, guys? Right?
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. You heard it all. It's on official No Direction film tape. Right, Param?
Oh, absolutely. But of course, you know, I've got selfish interest in that in both directions.
Oh, I assumed you were going to say that you could just cut the tape out whenever.
Speaking of cutting, let's cut to the chase.
Excellent.
The core rule book.
Yes, there is going to be one, and it's called Second Edition.
But, oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack just in the announcement. Am I right, Param?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and switch over to the announcement page so everybody can see it while we chat about it. Huzzah! Big, gigantic announcement page. And the first thing up is the core rulebook. It's going to be available as a hardcover and a deluxe hardcover, which that's not surprising considering even the beta got a deluxe and everything seems to be getting deluxes these days. At the price point of $59.99 for the normal hardcover and $79.99 for the deluxe hardcover, which is, again, the same price as the beta.
Do we know what's deluxe about it?
Leather hard. It's just a leather cover.
So comparable to the deluxe playtest?
Yeah, and just like the deluxe playtest one and deluxe Star, and the deluxe Starfinder book. And there's a picture of it on the website. There's no gold inlay this time. It's just like an embossed red leather book.
That's really cool, though. I might have to continue my tradition of getting Eric Mona to sign leather products for me and pick that one up.
Mm-hmm. And
so I want to talk about the cover.
Okay, yeah. I'm pulling that up now.
First thing I notice is that we've got three iconics that don't get... Well, okay, two of the three iconics don't get as much cover material as the others.
Oh,
so we've got Kira.
Kira.
Karsk, who's a little more redheaded.
Mm-hmm. And he's got two axes.
More importantly, Mariciel is dual-wielding, something rogues could not do in the playtest.
No, they couldn't.
A lot of people said, hey, how come my rogue can't dual-wield? Mm-hmm. Now, art is not rules.
Right.
But the fact that this is on the cover, you figure that a controversial topic like that, they wouldn't let that slip. So, not confirmed, but that's certainly interesting.
Yeah, and Alex pointed out that this is their canonical couple on the cover.
It is.
That's right.
They've got their LGBTQ representation couple right there on the front cover of the core rulebook. In the original Pathfinder core rulebook, it was Sione and Valoros.
Mm-hmm.
And now instead, we've gotten rid of both of them, and they were kind of like the poster children for first edition. And we've replaced them with Harsk and our iconic couple, which is Kira and Mariciel. Yeah. In the comic books, they are a lesbian couple, and it's really great to see them here. And also, because of the three they picked, it means that all of the iconics on the cover are of different ancestries instead of the Pathfinder core rulebook where everybody's human.
Good observation.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't know if it's true, but this looks suspiciously like the treasure room that's on the cover of Ultimate.
It's got the same statue that's been on the cover of the first edition rulebook too. If you look in the lower left-hand corner,
There's a lot of callbacks to Pathfinder in this scene, and it's great. Also, one thing that I want to point out is that this art piece continues a trend that I don't know if you guys covered the iconic Fumbus story from last week. Did you talk about that on the show?
Really.
Yeah, so Paizo came out with their backstory for the iconic goblin alchemist Fumbus. And on that goblin is like really bright green, which Rain Reynolds usually uses more of a kind of more saturated color palette. And this cover is like, it's bright, it's red, it's like practically glowing. It's a very different color palette than we're used to seeing from the first edition Starfinder book. I'm still in No Direction Beyond mode. The first edition Pathfinder books. Like... The brightness of the cover really caught me off guard, and I really like it.
The brightness of Harsh's hair is what's catching me off guard. He looks more like a Warhammer dwarf than Harsk. Harsk is like leaning towards ginger, but he's more of a brunette ginger.
Maybe it could be that he's just on fire right now, literally.
It could also be the lighting in the rooms is that. But no, I like Perrin's answer, fire. We're going to assume that Harsk is literally and figuratively, which is great.
Is that the saddest dragon horde you've ever seen?
It is tiny, which fits in, it is from an official Pathfinder adventure, so that fits.
Adam Diggle is in chat and he's confirming it's lighting that Harsk hasn't his hair color hasn't been updated officially.
That's so funny.
Hey Adam, nice to see you.
Hey Adam Diggle's in chat. My strange Aeon players are broke. Great, thanks Adam.
Okay, so besides the cover, there's another bit of very obvious huge news about the core rulebook.
Go on.
It is 640 pages.
First edition was what, 540?
570. 575.
570.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the biggest Pathfinder book?
This is definitely the biggest Pathfinder book. This might be the biggest book of any role-playing game. Maybe Tolas beats it. It would have to be Tolas.
We've officially gone from dealing 1d10 bludgeoning damage when you cudgel somebody with the core rulebook to 1d12 damage when you cudgel somebody with this one. Congratulations, Pathfinder design team. You've officially made a more lethal improvised weapon.
We're going to talk about a little bit later, but the fact that the this is 640 pages, the bestiary is 360, so it's an even 1,000 pages when split between the two books.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. It's a great number. It's really good. There's somebody in marketing who was like, yes, this was my idea.
Oh. And some other relevant number-related facts. The beta book. The beta book here, it is only 428 pages. So we're over 200 pages. 220, 222 more pages than the beta, the playtest book of second edition.
So a fun number.
Yeah.
So he's the GM. That's a cool name. I don't know if I've seen you in chat before, but he's saying the complete Tomb of Horrors from Frog God Games was bigger, he thinks, or they think.
So I have it here somewhere. I could verify that later after a break.
All right. So what about products? Details about this book. What's taken up those 640 pages?
Okay, so just reading off the stat thing, this is including Game Master material, so this is similar to first edition, so it's going to be for the increasingly irrelevant comparisons to Dungeons & Dragons, it is the Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master Guide equivalent in one book. There are going to be 6 player character ancestries, so they list it as elf, dwarf, gnome, goblin, halfling, and human. So the half ancestries are also listed as variant heritages, is the phrasing they're using for those, of half elf and half orc. 30 backgrounds.
Heritage is not something we know official word. Like, we don't know that as a rules word, and it's a variant heritage. I'm curious.
Well, they used heritage in the 1.6 update to playtest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they called. Ancestry feats that's like changed your background kind of thing.
Well, they got rid of the feats. Now it's just a choice you make for your ancestry.
Yeah, that's right. So every character
gets to say that.
It was the 1.6 update. So the heritage feats got taken away, and then they just made heritage a choice you made when you pick your ancestry. So you could be a wood elf or a... Yeah.
So any human can choose to be half.
Well, in the first version of the playtest, there was a specific type of ancestry feat called heritage feat.
Now I remember.
Okay. There's more than 30 backgrounds, like bartender, soldier. So the backgrounds are still in here, just like Starfinder.
I'm pretty sure 30 is more than was in the playtest.
I do not know. Barely. Huh?
I'm telling Alex I can barely hear him.
Okay.
Speaking of Starfinder, one thing I hope is that there is a generic background similar to the themeless option in Starfinder, because, man, was that my favorite theme.
Themeless?
Themeless is my favorite theme, bar none. It is the fighter of themes. It is the you get to break your own theme, and you don't have to worry about having to fit into somebody else's pre-existing shape.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, actually, I do agree. I think that it would be good if there is a backgroundless background or rules, or at least like loose rules for make your own. There's the 12 character classes, which are the original 11 plus Alchemist, just like the playtest.
Don't forget, Paladin got its name changed.
Oh yeah, Paladin is now called Champion officially.
In the thread for that book, they clarify that the champion is going to have 3 alignment variants. There's going to be one for lawful good, one for chaotic good, and one for neutral good in the core rulebook.
Oh, so the evil ones aren't going to be in the core rulebook.
Nope, they clarified that it was the 3 good ones.
Interesting. But that, of course, leaves design space open for them later.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. The anti-paladin didn't come into existence until the Advanced Player's Guide. I can live with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the 12... Then it goes on to say hundreds and hundreds of spells, class feats, and other exciting abilities. So the word class feat appears. Streamlined and revised rules to make it easier to play the game, etc., etc. So that's what we know about this book. There's some interesting news. There was 125,000... More than 125,000 people that they can count that play tested. So that's an interesting number.
In chat, I'm going to say T. Doher is saying that Eric Mona has said they will release additional champions later.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I would be super surprised if they didn't.
Very. I'd actually even expect that maybe down the line we'll see like specific champions for like specific concepts.
So that's pretty much all we can glean from the hardcover core rulebook. We did mention pricing. It looks like it is the same pricing that we saw for the Starfinder and later releases of the Pathfinder rulebook, in that the core rulebook will be $60 by default, and the bestiary, which is 340 pages, is going to be $50. So that's a $10 increase over the launch prices of Pathfinder First Edition, and that tracks with the similar prices in the industry. Like, 5th edition is similar prices for their 300-page books.
I was going to say, if you bought the 3 core rulebooks for 5th edition, how does that compare to buying the 2 core rulebooks for 2nd
edition? You save $40. You save $40 by playing Pathfinder. And you save a whole lot of bucks if they keep the price for the PDF at $10 a piece. if previous launches of Star Finder and Pathfinder are anything to judge this by, if you're super interested in getting it on day one, pre-ordering might be a good idea, especially if you want one of those limited editions, like the leather-bound ones, because they sold out of everything at PaizoCon anymore. Or sorry, Gen Con. Next up is the Bestiary, and let me pull up the page for the Bestiary and pull its cover up.
Have you seen the art for this one yet?
No, actually, I haven't, and I also just saw there's a deluxe hardcover for the Bestiary too.
Indeed, there's going to be a leather release of a fall leather cover for the Bestiary. Let me pull it up too.
Bestiary is also a red leather, so the two will match.
Yeah, I am surprised because I think the super deluxe was green. No, never mind. I'm misremembering.
The super deluxe what?
I'm misremembering. There was no fall leather of the original Bestiary. There was just the gold foil variant for employees.
So we're looking at the cover? Is that what you wanted to bring attention to, Alex?
Yes, the cover.
The cover is great. Do you know what all those monsters are, Ryan?
I do not. Okay. Well, I know the troll. I know the Hydra. I don't know what those goblin-y looking guys on the left are.
That's their new kobold art. They announced it in the product there, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, they made the kobolds different. I can dig it.
They're so cute. It's great. I love it.
I like the dragon influence. I'm not crazy about their silhouette is a little bit comparable to the goblins. I would have liked a little difference between kobolds and goblins.
I worried that, honestly, before that was clarified, I was like, is there some weird lizard goblins? Like, we have the monkey goblins. So lizard goblins would be, but no, they kobolds.
A lot of goblins.
Well, I like the fact that they took the time to like put them in different colors, because that was in Monster Codex, but you kind of just saw the same red ones over and over before.
Yeah, I can understand why they would want to do some differentiation with the kobolds, because Wizards of the Coast was the one that introduced the lizard kobold with third edition, and they've sort of kept that same look for that creature, but it doesn't really exist outside of D&D's interpretation of it. And in Pathfinder, they just looked like Wizards of the Coast kobolds, whereas traditionally kobolds in D&D had been like little coyotes. And so at least
some were dog-faced, more like a bulldog.
I've never seen a bulldog kobold before. I guess I'm thinking of the second edition ones. Of course, what kobolds are supposed to look like are little blue fairy people that like children, and that doesn't really help us very much, does it?
No. Really?
Yeah.
World of Warcraft, they're
the origin of kobolds.
Yeah.
What culture is a kobold from?
It's a Germanic fairy tale creature.
So right now we're drifting pretty far from that.
Yeah, we're very, very far from. But of course, you know, when Gygax ported over monsters, he just random name, random appearance. Let's just mush that together.
Now, I know often kobolds are dragonkin, and we've got, I see four kobolds here because there is a green one peeking out, which means we've got four of the five chromatic colors that are associated with the dragons. So do you think this is an embracement?
Yeah, it has to be.
Is them embracing the dragon connection?
It has to.
Yeah. And that kind of, again, that kind of ties back with how they're presented in Monster Codex, where like there was a feat in that book that lets you like pick a chromatic color and you get like resistance based on it. So this just seems to be them doubling down on what kobolds are and just giving them a new.
Why didn't the white make them?
Is the white anybody's favorite dragon?
No. Actually, I really liked how they were represented in Dragons Revisited, where they're like the dumb dragons, but they're only dumb by dragon category. Like they're genius level creatures. But they're the dumb dragons.
Man, very few people talk up Dragons Revisited.
I did not like Dragon Revisited, but I really like the white dragon in
it. My thought is that it would probably look weird, really weird to have a big white splotch on your pretty jungle fen kind of book. So they probably didn't put the white one in. That guy wasn't going to live past childhood anyway. He's not going to be able to hide from predators. All of his traps get seen. He's bright. Will you buy my headcanon?
Say it again.
Will you buy my headcanon?
Sure. The headcanon on the development of the cover?
No, about why there's no white kobold on the cover. Okay.
So some details about the Bestiary. More than 400 monsters. Full color illustration on every page. The standard list you'd expect. Universal monster rules, just like we'd expect. Lore sidebars. Interestingly, no mention of ancestries in this book, like would appear in a bestiary typically. And also no explicit explicit mention of monster creation rules in either this or the core rulebook. in Starfinder, they put the alien creation rules in the alien archive, so I kind of expected that to be where it would live here, but we don't know. They haven't said one way or the other where monster creation rules are.
There was a clarification.
No, I'm having a little trouble with the math of 400 creatures in a 360-page book.
When you get to, like, animals, they just throw four and five stat box on, you know.
Sure, but when you get to devils, usually they get a couple of pages each. And dragons?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to need extra ferrets in this book.
Oh, Adam Double Daigle, ferret. Once again, with the save, saying shorter stat blocks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because if it follows what we saw of, again, Starfinder and the playtest, this stat blocks can be super compact, even for high-level critters. Though the Grim Reaper stat block we saw was not compact at all. It was massive.
Mark Moreland also commented in the product thread through this product that there will be no ancestries in this book. And then someone else in the thread, I think it was Eric Mona, had a italicized "they're coming soon" later. So whatever that means.
All right. Other than that, nothing really much to say on this. Day and date. All these products are August 1st. We're not going to be waiting for the bestiary.
That's good. They could afford to wait for the bestiary for Pathfinder 1, because the monster manuals for 3.5 were still compatible with it. But this is a new system. There are no rules for it. And so if you release the core rulebook without monsters, then people are just fighting human fighters until the monsters come along.
That was a lesson that they probably learned from Starfinder.
Yeah, because there was a period of time waiting for that alien book where we were having to steal monster stats from anywhere we could get them just to make up our own adventures. Next.
Right, you want to talk about the adventure path? We're going down the page, right?
Yeah, down the page. The
Age of Ashes.
Alex, you know the most about this one. We have the Age of Ashes adventure path. What can you tell me?
Age of Alex.
The Age of Alex
adventure path. No, that'd be really weird. Unlike my happy rant in the No Direction book, this is not about the Age of Ashes from Tien Sha. This is about a new thing that involves Hell Knights and Izgur, which means if it's an Izgur, there's probably goblins. It looks like it's going to be typical adventure path length and size. I don't think there's any comments about whether or not we're getting any back matter articles with, like, monsters or anything. Is there a pair? I didn't see any.
No, there doesn't appear to be any mention of that yet. Yeah. We do know that the first volume is called Hell Knight Hill.
It's an extensive gazetteer of the hero's hometown, a guide from GMs to look forward to the campaign, new magic items, over a half dozen new monsters.
Monsters!
Back matter to me.
Whoa, there we go. Okay, there is...
Do we have a page count?
I didn't.
Not that I see.
Okay. I'm curious as if it's going to go down to 64 pages like the Starfinder ones did, or if it's still going to be 96. That's a big question I have.
My gut says it's probably going to be 96, but we do have a couple Paizo stuffers in chat if they want to enlighten us.
Says 96.
96!
All right, we'll do that.
Good. I really like 96.
I assumed it was going to be 96 because from what I understand, all the products that we've talked about so far are rolling in on the current subscription models. So, like, if you're subscribed to the Pathfinder core rulebook line, Pathfinder 2 is coming your way as part of that subscription. So I imagine they'd probably want to keep it as similar as possible.
Also, the trend for these books has not been small.
It's been bigger, better.
And I accidentally pressed the wrap up and shout outs button. We are not wrapping up. It was just a misclick.
So the first adventure is Hell Knight Hill. I think that's a really strong place to start. Hell Knights were one of the first parts of the Galarian lore that caught my attention. And having a big old Hell Knight right on the cover staring right at you, almost challenging you to pick up this adventure.
And they have a Reaper mini of this Hell Knight, and I own it, and it is awesome, and I'm going to love getting to use it.
I'm expecting that this adventure might answer a little bit of the question of why goblins are now player races, because it takes place in Izgur, which is famous for the Goblin Blood War. So I'm really excited to see what they end up doing with this adventure. I think that this could be an adventure that sets the stage for the next, like, 10-year Pathfinder. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Funny enough, that is what I speculated the first adventure path would cover in last episode when we were wondering what we thought the first adventure path might be. I was saying some kind of Goblin Civil War that would set up playable goblin.
I am sure that everybody in Paizo that listened to that podcast started spinning around in their seats, cackling gleefully at your guess.
Or they really quickly turned around that idea. They stole it.
Amanda just topped it in a flurry while she was listening. Also, Amanda Hammond is joining us. That's the same Amanda Hammond that's joining us on the recently announced Actual Play podcast on the network, right?
Woo! Yay. Yes, it is.
Yay!
Eric Bone is in chat clarifying that this cover is a mock-up, which is probably why we've already seen this particular as a Reaper miniature, because the art already existed.
Okay. Well, I hope I get to use that mini anyway, because it's a really cool-looking mini, and I painted it up real nice, and I'm really proud of it.
You know, Param, Pathfinder might be switching editions, but your miniatures aren't.
Don't lean into the mic.
I didn't lean.
Put that hand gesture. Something I want to point out at the bottom of this is the familiar Pathfinder Adventure Path volumes use the open game license, worked with both the Pathfinder RPG and the World's Oldest Fantasy RPG. So it's still a selling point that if you're not playing Pathfinder, but you're playing other fantasy RPGs, you could these adventures up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's OGL, so yeah, you could totally convert the stats and stuff. And ooh, you know, like they're converting the Adventure Paths to 5th edition. They were converting them to 4th edition. I can totally see back conversions to 1st edition happening in the fan communities like almost as fast as these are coming out.
So Eric Mona is being super helpful in chat. He points out the core rulebook, Bestiary, Lost Omens World Guide, which we haven't got to yet, of Plagues, again, haven't got to, and the GM screen are actual covers. The rest is mock-ups.
Okay. Thank you, Eric, very much, Mr. Mo.
Would you like to come
on? Yeah, we can add you to this call if you want to just join in. We are totally eager to just put you right there.
That is a serious invitation, but we also understand that you might be very busy right now.
Yeah.
So just let us know.
And something or inebriated, because I have a feeling that this is celebration worthy.
To which Eric replies, "Hey."
All right. Yeah. Okay, so moving on from...
Before we move on, do we know anything else about the future volumes of Age of Ashes? Do we know any of the cover, the titles or authors?
No, this is all we know.
Not yet. Okay. I imagine that the rest is probably going to be PaizoCon-worthy discussion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there we go. Eric says he's heading out shortly, unfortunately.
Hope you have a good time, Mr. Mona. So next up is another adventure going to be landing day and date. This one is a standalone 64-page softcover, so the bigger, thicker adventure format that started with Dragon's Demand. The Fall of Plaguestone. And this one this one is going to have a flip map available of its dungeon.
So smart. I'm so excited. I want flip maps for all of my adventure paths.
Okay, pulling up its cover. It's a mock cover.
Before we move on, Eric Mona says the current plan for Age of Ashes is for it to go, and he goes all caps. All the way to level 20.
Whoa!
There's a game that goes to level 20, so the fact that the adventure paths always said, but we know that after level 15 it's a problem, so we'll shy away from that stuff. Mm-hmm. No, if you're going to prove that second edition is a first to 20 level game for real, it's nice to have an adventure path that goes for it right away.
Yep.
And to start with it.
The only adventure paths that go to level 20 for first edition is Return of the Rune Lords and Wrath of the Righteous.
Kingmaker. The open world ones also have a lot of potential to go higher.
But are they designed to?
Does Tyrant's Grasp go to 20? I think it might.
I don't know. I know that was a selling point on Return of the Rune Lords.
Strange Aeons.
So we do know that the Fall of Plaguestone involves a small community called Plaguestone, which is a really unfortunate name to name your town. I'm just saying. One of your friends has been murdered. Also, there's a forbidden alchemist, evil alchemist, mutant animals. This kind of is my jam. One of the first homebrew adventures I ran for Pathfinder was evil mutant and Isle of Dr. Moreau style alchemists. Oh, also, Alex pointed this out. There's going to be a special set of Dwarven Forge tiles available for this adventure.
Really?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Cool. Yeah. It's really cool. I'm excited to see what they do with that. I think Dwarven Forge has a lot of awesome potential.
Now, it says it's for one specific encounter called the Pen, but this is a 64-page book, so one encounter is 10% of encounter.
Mm-hmm. And again, this has a flip map available of its dungeon, so that'll be cool.
I'm surprised. This is one of the ones that Eric said this is the final cover, but it looks like a sketch. I believe this is the template for the final art and not a mock-up, but...
If he says it's final, could be an interesting art direction for second edition.
Eric Mona clarifies it's not.
Okay.
It's not a sketch or it's not final?
Oh, that doesn't help us.
The final art is on the main page, he says.
I'm pulling that up for the chat. There it is.
We've got Amiri Ezrin facing off with some wolves that look like they might be up to something.
Especially the sneaky one in back.
Those dastardly wolves.
And is that a covered wagon?
That's the sneaky one in back. Baram, I didn't even see him.
Mm-hmm. That's because he's got good. He's got a good stealth score.
Which Adam Diggle is calling an acid wolf. Why?
Oh no!
Wait a minute. They did say mutant animals. That really could be an acid wolf.
Yeah. All right.
I wonder if that means a wolf that is like dripping acid from its fangs, or whether that means it's a wolf that has all sorts of delightful hallucinogenics.
Jeez, delightful. That's a weird. There were
air quotes in that, but I'm afraid of bumping my mic, so I didn't actually make.
Oh, okay. Daigle says that he's developed this adventure, which is where he gets inside information that those are acid wolves. Did you mention this was written by Jason Bulman?
I did not. So this is Jason Bulman's Fall of Plaguestone.
That's very interesting because Jason Bulman wrote the first standalone adventure in the modules line.
Yeah, Crypt of the Everflame.
Yeah.
It's also interesting because where did he find the time?
I don't know. Like, seriously, this is 1,000 pages of core rules that he was having to wrangle in not a whole lot of time to turn a playtest into a final product. How?
Well, you see, over the past few months, several major snowstorms have hit the Seattle region, and Bulman found himself completely and utterly snowed into his apartment. In order to avoid going stir crazy, Plaguestone was born.
Was he just riding friends and then that just become the adventure?
For a second there, also, Alex, I thought you were suggesting Jason Bulman caused the snowstorm.
To just sit at home. No, I'm pretty sure if they
could out of his day.
I'm pretty sure that if he caused the snowstorm, the entire Paizo office would have utterly destroyed him.
This is a good time to point out that we are recording this live in front of a Twitch audience. So if you've got any questions for us, or any comments, or any corrections because you happen to be Paizo staff and are watching this episode, please let us know in chat and we will interweave it throughout the episode.
In case people thought I had Eric Mona and Adam Daigle tied up in my bedroom, it's like, hey, tell us more about this product. What's with the cover?
You know, that would be an Interpol issue because you would have had to cross international lines.
Yes, your CIA would have to, with my CSIS, to take me.
And even your CSIS. Agencies are polite.
CSIS is a light name?
It's a cute name.
So it's CSIS, and when CSI first came on, I thought that there was a TV show about CSIS. I was like, what?
That would be a cool TV show.
Is there an American channel with a TV show about the Canadian Secret Intelligence Service?
Why not? They're doing every other acronym in the world.
That awesome.
Yes, you should do it. You personally.
I screamed out CSIS, a comedy, and it's all right.
So next up is, this one was a surprise, The Lost Omen World Guide. It's a campaign-setting hardcover launching with the game.
So interesting.
Hardcover.
Huh?
136 pages. That feels small for a campaign setting hardcover.
Yeah. Have they put out a hardcover that small before?
You said 365?
136.
136, according to product page.
That is on the smaller side.
Yeah, and this is only going to be $36.99 retail, so it's priced accordingly.
I think what's most interesting about it is that they clarified in the product thread for this book that the Lost Omens campaign setting is the official name of their campaign setting. Because before it was just called the Pathfinder campaign setting, and they wanted to give it an official name, so they went with the name of the current era, which is the Lost Omens campaign. It seems like it's set up as almost like a summary of the last 10 years of the Pathfinder campaign setting. I'm very interested in
that. Yeah, there's a couple of things I like about that name. One of them is that it's not just Pathfinder, and that's good. Two is that it's not Intersea or Galarian, both of which are words that were used to flavor first edition books. So right away, you've got a word that's not associated with first edition, but it is a word that's been, or a term that's been in Pathfinder since the beginning. This era of that all our adventures are taking place is the Age of Lost Omens, according to the lore.
And you know what's really great about this book title? Because it's called the Age of Lost Omens, it doesn't restrict itself to just Avistan and Northern Garund, and they've clarified that this book is going to have the first ever full artistic rendition of the planet Galarian ever. Like, in high quality. Because there's, like, an old sketchy one from, like, 10 years ago.
I love the old sketchy one.
Yeah. And apparently this is a new one. They've got an official map of the entire planet. I am so psyched for this. This is great. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm going to add a fourth point to what I like. Never liked the Intersea World Guide as the name of a book, because it's like Europe's guide to the world. Like, no, I want the world's guide to the world. And The Lost Omen, like, this is a history book as much as a geography.
The that Europe world guide.
Also, Eric Mona in chat says something important. This on the pre-order page says pre-order July 2019. He points out, no, That should be August 1st, like all of the...
Okay. The cover, I do want to talk about the cover. We have Sione fighting up against, I believe that's a Death Knight?
Yeah, that looks like it.
She's lost her helmet. We've seen her a lot without her helmet lately.
Is she carrying her helmet? I think she's being ambushed by that Death Knight. She was just walking around casual holding her helmet.
Is this Sione? You said Sione.
I meant Sione.
Okay.
Sila with...
Grave Knight, King of Rock is correcting, not Death Knight.
Right. Phoebus is on it, and Valros is on it.
So far, all of the books from launch have had different iconics, right?
Indeed.
Well, I like that.
Because Valros and Sione were on the cover of the Inner Sea World, in addition to fighting Tarb.
Yeah, that is true. They kept reusing Valros and Sione.
A lot. That's why it's so great.
Ones that had complete art at the time, I believe.
It's possible.
Some interesting things about this one is that it will have... crap, I lost it. It's going to have backgrounds that you can pick. So this will have crunch in it. This will have player crunch in this book.
Crunchy. So I appreciate that this book exists separate from the core rulebook. Mm-hmm. I know that Starfinder was all three, like core rulebook, GM's guide, and setting guide.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the idea is that second edition of Pathfinder embrace the setting more like the end of first edition Pathfinder than the beginning of it. But the fact that the book is separate is important to me, and like I wouldn't even be surprised. It's so short. I wouldn't be surprised if this got bumped from what core rule came.
Oh, I agree, because I love Starfinder and I love the Pact Worlds, but the Starfinder core rulebook was so cramped with so much content that there were definitely areas that suffered. Most notably, the equipment section suffered because there was just you could not fit so much content into one book like they did. And even though that there is that section that is the world guide, since the Pact World book has come out, that has mostly become superseded, so it's less important that part exists. And so it's one of the areas where I agree with you. I'm glad this is separate, and I hope that that means it's not there's not so much in the book, because next year when a book like this would have eventually come out, then any the pages they put in the core rulebook would be extra pages you're carrying around that you're not using. Also
like that it calls out it's designed for both players and game masters,
because
a lot of time the campaign setting has more of a game master bend. But this one, I guess, will establish what the secrets are but reveal them so players can read it, get into the lore, really get invested in
and maybe a hint of things to come. This it does specifically call out that it has archetypes in it.
Dun, dun.
And
ready to move on to the auxiliary, the accessories.
Yes, and at first glance, this doesn't look too surprising. You've got a GM screen, the combat pad. This will be the fifth version of the combat pad.
Is it? I thought it was. I only know two versions. Unless
okay, there's the Steel Squire version, the original version. There is the Pathfinder original version. The revised
just branded version of the original, right? They didn't update the design much?
They changed the colors of the tags, because I have some of the original tags and they don't match.
Okay.
There's the Advanced Player's Guide one. The one with all the Advanced Player's Guide characters. It's got like...
No, this isn't GM screens. We're talking about the combat pad.
Oh, I thought we were...
No, the combat pad. Then there was the revised... combat pad for Pathfinder, where they updated the art and changed the orientation so that the notes were on the right and the initiative was on the left. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Starfinder version of the combat pad, which is the same combat pad but blue and with the Starfinder logo. But on the reverse side of the Starfinder one's actually super useful, because on the reverse side it has the initiative broke up into ship combat version, which is actually super helpful, because that's much more complicated to track than normal initiative. And then this version. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And because this is a mock-up, we don't actually know what this version looks like.
Yeah, we don't know.
That looks very similar, if not exactly the same, as the last version of the Pathfinder
one. Yep. I hope that it is more like the newest Pathfinder one, if it had my version, which actually doesn't look like this. The newest version of the Pathfinder one, the notes section is on the right-hand side of the screen, and the initiative's on the left, and it makes it easier to write notes if you're a right-handed person. Because the previous version, your notes were always under your thumb, and you're writing real awkward and smudging your own notes.
Thanks, Eric.
Bye, Eric. Also, they had a grid on the newest version that made it easier to move and place things and write things. There was a visible grid instead of just blank space. So I hope it's more like the new one.
I'm going to say that like this is the product that I'm like, eh, about the most. But yeah, like the other ones are all real exciting.
Combat Pets is a nice product, but don't use it.
Save the $25, use grid paper for now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe this is a nice thing to ask for your birthday.
Or you could use our initiative tents that are available on nodirectionpodcast.com over on the website, where we have a free version of initiative tents that I will totally update for second edition.
I'm so glad that you waited until Eric left to plug our own.
GM screen. I know this is one of the products that I heard a lot about in this the skimming that I managed to do, because we've got two versions. We've got the landscape and we've got the portrait.
Yeah, the landscape is going to be the default version that's distributed to stores, and the portrait version is the Paizo exclusive one.
It's also known as the I like my players and want to see them screen, and the I want to hide from my players and never see them.
Do you have a preference, Ryan?
I'm tall, so portrait makes more sense.
Oh, you also stand.
I do, yeah. The table.
Even I can be over my screen when I'm standing up, just barely, though.
Yeah, so I actually appreciate portrait is not only, I don't mind the setback of portrait being taller, but I like the smaller footprint, the width-wise, because I just always find space at the tables a premium.
And it's too bad Eric left, because he totally trolled me about this on Twitter a couple of months ago.
Did he?
Yeah, back when like Pathfinder 2 was taking the turn where we saw like a lot of the improvements that we were getting kind of positive on, like, you know, change in the direction we hoped it would go in. I put up a post on Twitter that was like, okay, non-rules hopes I have for second edition, you know, just to try and start a conversation. And I just started off with, I hope the GM screen is landscape. And then Eric popped up and said, me too.
Now, and Daigle's in chat. He says he doesn't use screens, but the landscape screen looks so good. Now, Daigle, we only have mock-ups of these screens. They're just taunting us.
Oh.
I appreciate that. I was like, oh, yeah, it looks so good. Let me look it up. I can't. Thanks, all right, Adam.
I guess I should pull this up on screen. But all you're going to see is this actually probably, this looks like newish art, actually. It might be real art.
Okay, he wasn't deliberately taunting. He didn't realize what being
Yeah.
So, I forgive you.
So, you know, it looks like a cool GM screen.
Honestly, more than I thought we'd be able to talk about the GM screen.
Yeah.
It's a GM screen. Oh, but it's got features.
Yeah. $20 for the GM screen, which is $5 more than previous GM screens.
That should be an August release date now.
Everything on this page is an August 1st release date.
Oh, wait a second. So you were saying it's new art? Daigle says that is a quarter of the art of the full screen. So
oh, okay.
That is appropriate art for this product. Mm-hmm. We just don't get the full screen.
Okay, pulling it up on screen again so our audience can see. There's a blue dragon, and he's got a bigger treasure hoard than the red dragon.
I mean, in the core rulebook, they could just be standing in the entrance hallway and like the rest of the treasure. I'd buy that. They're in like the fancy hallway. Have you ever seen National Treasure where like there's the little bit of treasure and then they light it up and it's like treasure? That's this dragon's lair. He lives in the National Treasure thing.
I like it. I also have a theory. Core rulebook is the beginning of the story. They're hunting down that red dragon for his hoard, only to find out that a bigger blue dragon stole that red dragon's hoard like the day before. Also, Harsk dies and is reincarnated as Valoros. And now that same three-person party of Harsk, but now Valoros, with Kira and Rusiel, are now continuing the adventure against...
Well, given the way the comics went this last little bit, that's certainly possible. Okay, next up is the character sheet pack. Oh, you got something?
Oh, just Daigle was saying that Alex is to write closer to me than me anyway.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate that.
So the character sheet pack, which right now, we don't know if this is final art, but it's showing the new versions, the fully painted versions of the sketches we saw in the beta of Seoni. I always forget the monk's name, and Kira.
Who's Celtiel?
Celtiel's the Magus.
Celtiel's the Magus.
He may be out of a job if they decide that wizard with multi-class fighter works better.
Than get in line with iconic alchemist Stamia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Elaine might have been replaced too. He's now an archetype.
So how this one is different from previous character packs is there's going to be a character sheet in here for each class.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we should point out this is not the deluxe character sheet like you're thinking for Pathfinder where it was one single bound product. This is a package of loose sheets. This is a character pack.
Yeah. And it is a folder with flaps to store them in. This is not just going to be a wrap. So it's a folio, I think. There's also going to be handouts and encounter sheets and animal sheets and all sorts of other and spell tracking sheets and lots of sheets. Retail price is $14.99.
And this is a product I could see a lot of people getting as a PDF, assuming we're there.
Yeah.
And Adam, do you happen to know if there's going to be the little caveat at the bottom that people are allowed to photocopy these sheets?
That's a super important caveat.
It is. Every time I try to go to Staples to get my Pathfinder Society scenario and stuff printed, they always give me this dirty, I can't print. But you can't contract that says you... I won't. This is a conversation I've had three times now.
I must go to like the Staples that's just full of all the rebels that don't care, because I never get questioned about this. And I print hundreds of pages of Paizo stuff. All legally obtained. All legally obtained.
Nope. Oh, Daigle says this is one product he has almost no insight in.
Wonderful. Wonderful. For once, this one definitely sounds like a better proposition than the original first edition one that we didn't review super highly when we reviewed it.
Well, I was just talking about space is a premium. That is product is not terrible. So I'm guessing this cover is a mock-up. No, I'm not just guessing. Eric told us there's two things I like about it. One is that it looks like Sejan is standing near a sword.
Which he could do.
He could.
And two, it looks like Sione was cold and Sejan gave her his cloak.
Yeah. I mean, how... Yeah.
Isn't that cloak part of her canon redesign, though? I thought it was on the cup.
This is her new iconic outfit.
Yeah, they gave her an outfit.
Yeah, cold and now that I've zoomed in, the blue doesn't match as much as I thought it did. Well, I'm sticking by my joke.
Mm-hmm. I like your joke. It was good. They should change the canon, and that's where she got it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a shirt on now, so he doesn't need all those layers.
He's got a shirt on? I didn't see that. Sejan, why? You were a monk. You were immune to the cold.
Doesn't make other people to have, hang out with the shirtless, probably sweaty guy.
Do other people have a problem with this?
Moving. Right, keep going, Param.
Moving on, we have, probably not surprising at all, the condition cards. One of the most successful card products that Paizo has ever made.
But do you know what is surprising about it?
What?
That pack has 104 cards in it.
That's the heck?
That is literally twice as much as the ones from like the last season. I like to think it's because there were so many conditions in the plate.
Wait. It might not be that. It might just be, oh, you're dying four, here's four dying cards.
That'd actually be really funny.
Actually, that makes sense, though. That would be a functional version. Yeah.
But do you know what you do then? When a player like dies and they die really bad, you get one of those Uno games that shoots the cards at you. And you load it with dying cards. And you point it at them. And you push the button. And it goes...
Okay, everyone. We have lost Alex to his own hilarity.
Listen, Alex, that was a winner. But I think it's funnier just how tickled you are with your own joke.
My biggest regret is that nobody listening to this as a podcast will be able to see how bright red my face is right now. It's almost as red as my shirt.
Tadoher does point out that it says there's multiple cards for common conditions. Mm-hmm. It's true. That's what it says on the product page. But that's similar to the first condition pack.
Right. There's four of each condition in the first condition card.
Yeah. Thanks to tact use of double-sided. Mm-hmm.
This is $22.99, and it's in one of their double deck boxes, according to the display. So, those are the accessories!
Yay!
Are we missing any other product?
I do not believe so. I think that's everything. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 products.
12 if you count the...
12 if you count the...
13 if you count the incoming Death by Uno card.
Something that's probably going to be overlooked. There is a blog post called Iconic Evolution, Amiri, and it goes into her update design. I haven't read it. I just happened to notice it there and thought, hey, since this also came out March 6th, is one of the best announcements Paizo ever put out, probably got missed. So if you haven't got enough Paizo reading to tonight, you can check out that blog post, which I assume is going to be...
It's actually not a blog you read. It is a video where... Ona interviews Wayne. It's actually really cool. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We're totally going to need to share this out on the Facebook page.
I'm very much looking forward to that. Yeah. That's cool.
talks about the changes he made to her design. He talks a little bit about why, what he's going for. It's a very interesting listen.
Yeah, she looks a lot more vicious in her new version.
She also looks like she's gotten a lot less sun, which makes sense. She's from the north, right?
Yeah.
She's from the lands of, I think. No, Mammoth, one of those. They're neighbors. I can't tell them.
Daigle in chat says, can't wait to tell you about the rest of 2019. Go on.
Tell us. We're listening.
I imagine that we will hear it at PaizoCon.
We promise that we'll only share it with like our 200,000 friends. It's great.
Darren Kaltmeyer says that the video is only 4 minutes. All right, I'm probably going to check that out as we're done here. Unless you guys want to just watch it live.
I mean, I can do that, but...
I know, but it's not our content to stream.
No.
The big thing coming for you is asking, where's the Game Mastery Guide? So that's a question.
The Game Mastery Guide didn't launch with Pathfinder First Edition. That was the third book. Product. Yeah.
Yeah, that came out in spring for the Advanced Player's Guide.
Yeah, because the Bestiary was the winter release, and then the spring release was Game Mastery, and then...
Advanced Player.
APG, so yeah, there wasn't a summer release that year.
Yeah, and the reason we might not be getting a Game Mastery Guide, or at least there's info for it, is the reception to the first edition. It's always just been seen as an extra book and not an essential. Like, people went crazy when the APG came out. That was like, this is the book that defines Pathfinder. And people all used the Core Rulebook and the Bestiary. The Game Mastery Guide came out in that time and is the most forgotten of those hardcovers. Yeah.
I mean, its biggest accomplishment was making the NPC guide happen.
Yeah.
I use a lot of the plain stuff in my
NPC guide then replaced one of the useful sections of that.
And I don't want to say it's a bad book. It's a pretty good advice for GMing and tools book.
It's good. Do you know what was interesting? I was perusing through a bunch of these products and they were talking a little bit about like designs that are coming up in them. One of the changes they were talking about is that they have new region names for areas of Stin and North. So like...
Cut out missing two very important words from that sentence. They have new what?
They have new regional names.
Okay.
So like, you know, instead of just saying like, oh, this is a Vistan, there's like 20 countries there. Like they have like, this is the, you know, land of the snow people. That's actually not what it's called. But like all of those nations that are part of that like snowy area up north are part of one. It's actually really cool to see that sort of discussion on how they're reorganizing.
Yeah. Alex, I'm going to go to the splash screen. You just drop and pick up the call again.
Can I read Daigle?
Of course, of course. I'm just making the splash screen so that they don't see a broken link. Actually, product page. I'm pulling up product pages.
Adam Daigle has a really intriguing question. He says, speaking of the Game Mastery Guide, he's curious. How did people use the settlement stat block and NPC references in adventures? I gloss over the settlement stat block. It's something I should get valuable information for them, but other than like, all right, what's the percentage of halflings in this town? Okay, I'm good to go. And there's probably a lot more that I should be getting.
I'd be real honest. I don't use this. Like I never did in 3 or anything like that. Every now and then I was flipped to that section just to see how many people I need to be in a town for it to be a town as opposed to a village, as opposed to a city. But the NPC reference I used constantly until the NPC guide came out. That was super useful in shorthanding adventures and not having to make those NPCs myself.
Remember using the stat blocks a lot, but not as they were ended? Because I remember the waitress was a level 4 character with 2 levels of rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, that waitress has seen some things, which I guess... If adventurers are your main customer, probably had to backstab a people. But yeah, so the stat blocks were more useful than the fur of those stat blocks.
And we're back with Alex.
Welcome back, Alex.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Indeed.
How did you use the settlement stat blocks?
I used them a lot when I was doing adventure writing because that's a good way to convey simple information that the GMs might want. But I don't really see them as essential parts of the game. So I don't know. I don't know what you could really add in order to make them better. I feel like one thing is support because we got like settlement qualities and stuff in the Game Mastery's Guide. And then that stuff never really mattered again until Ultimate Campaign when they did like corruption and stuff. And those modifiers were like suddenly pulled back. And people doing kingdom building were like, wait, there's a settlement stat block in the Game Mastery Guide?
Settlements don't have levels, do they?
No.
Man, what if you could? You could level up your city.
Well, I'm a level 20.
If you go into a level 5, that right away is telling you a lot of things you need to know. Over or underpowered compared to, say, the town guard or the average tells you what kind of power of magic items you can get there. I wonder if they're kind of in love with this idea.
Oh, man. The random encounter charts could be keyed off your level of city and towns. And
Absolutely.
I think if you were going to do that, the level would have to refer to, like, the level of the city's government rather than its citizens, because saying every citizen in this town is level 5 is like, level 5, baby! And then you're...
Well, the power players, the ones that get called out anyway, because they do, like, most notable NPCs in stat blocks, so those would be the things that would matter for their levels.
Does that mean
who is the big fish in this small...
Yeah. What can I expect for the guard that beats me up?
He is the knight.
How confident can I ignore the guards?
Oh, imagine that, like, if they, like, you found out that, like, oh, Corvosa, that's only a level 4 city, and Magdemar, that's level 6, but Sandpoint's 27.
I'd be saying somebody's playing favorite.
Well, the Rune Heroes live there.
Like,
dudes that beat the crap out of Karzog live there.
Oh, someone hasn't read Return.
True enough.
Even if you never play it, that is an adventure path that is worth just...
All right. So what is everybody's overall impression on the launch lineup of what they've brought to the table?
I was trying to look up the name of a Canadian city that's super important, but super tiny. Like, it's basically the real world equivalent of Sandpoint. Gander. So Gander, because it's in Newfoundland, right? Yeah, so it is the easternmost international airport. So it is this tiny city, dozens of citizens, but it's the first place on American soil that this touched down to land. It's like, there's all kinds of stories like that, that it's like you're hanging at the airport and Frank Sinatra be there because it's just geographically significant, but minuscule, tiny little town. And there was an off-Broadway play about it because on 9/11, a lot of the planes had to be directed and it just became this split second really important city that has no reason being as important as it.
So the one thing that I wonder is, do cities naturally improve their size as they grow in levels? Because, like, I know from Las Vegas started as a really small desert, like, watering, and now, like, I'd argue that Las Vegas is a major city in the United States, but, like, it got significantly bigger as part of that. So, like, I'd actually be really interested to see some rules in, like, city design and, like, considerations. I think that's fascinating. Like, what makes your city level up? Is it the size of the population? Is it the importance of its imports and exports? Like, what is the essence of city level up? I think it's actually
Orlando, it was almost uninhabitable swampland.
Yeah.
And that's what made it big enough for Disney World, which is why it suddenly went from level 0 to level 40.
Let me tell you, though, don't drink the water in the Magic Kingdom.
But isn't it only level 40 because the Lich Lord Disney is buried underneath it?
Fact. Maybe. Speculation? Let's say speculation, just in case.
I like speculation.
All right, so we've talked about all the products. I mean, Pathfinder logo got updated slightly again.
Oh, yeah. I was really expecting the beta logo to stick, because it was a pretty impressive logo. I kind of like the new one.
Playtest logo a little bit
did
more.
Did you notice that the new one doesn't have the word role-playing?
Pathfinder's, the P is no longer a sword, something that apparently I'm the only person that ever noticed about the first edition.
Oh, I noticed that. I don't know. I thought, like...
I just turned to look.
People that talked to me.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because the Starfinder logo doesn't have role-playing game either. It's to be like a conscious branding choice for Paizo.
Speaking of conscious branding choices, they also are very clearly calling out second edition on the cover of everything in the upper right-hand corner.
Well, I mean, it minimizes product confusion. Like,
yeah, exactly. I agree.
Just, of Dungeons & Dragons was just supposed to be called Dungeons & Dragons. Nobody called it that because it was the edition. It's just, it was a fight between what was organically happening with the fans and what Wizards of the Coast wanted the branding to be, and eventually they accepted it, and it's just like, fine. So, like, Paizo is making the right bookstore has both editions mixed together. You'll be able to tell which one is second edition right away, not just because the dressing is different, because the dressing changed, it evolved all throughout the first edition. No, I think making sure you're not tricking somebody, and possibly Zet Paizo as a company and Pathfinder as a brand, is a very strong.
I also think that sort of harkens to what the Paizo team wants out of second edition compared to what the Wizards of the Coast wanted out of D&D Beyond. Fifth edition was very much a return to form, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And so trying to move away from that fourth edition branding was very important to them. They just wanted to get rid of all that edition stuff and just call it Dungeons & Dragons. But for Pathfinder, they have a much bigger incentive to step out of not only their own shadow, but the shadow of previous editions of this game. And so by embracing the fact that this is the second new edition of their game, that sort of puts the spotlight on this is something entirely different. And I think that sort of difference versus return to form is a big, like, theme difference. I'm sorry, that was way more philosophical than I...
Darren Caldemeyer, this is the second time he's brought this up. He kind of wishes the second edition was under the Pathfinder logo, either incorporated into it or just geographic. You see Pathfinder before you see second edition. I get what he's saying, but I think it's in a really important spot on cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it in that spot.
Yeah, I do yeah, too. One of the things
we get used to it.
One of the things I noticed when I went to bookstores recently is now is when you go to the bookstore, you know instantaneously where the fifth edition section is because they have controlled their trade dress so well, and they have that black red stripe on black that it just shows up like a beacon across the entire store because there's just a whole row of these books. And in Pathfinder, when I was looking at the Pathfinder books and the Starfinder books, they just sort of bled into the background radiation of the rest of the books in the bookstore. This at least will help with that a little bit, though I kind of wish that there was more control of the trade dress across the game so that that would happen.
Interesting. Go back to Age of Ashes, not the product page, but link to the product page on Pathfinder, paizo.com/Pathfinder.
Of course, pulling it up.
Yeah, we didn't pay attention to this, but that is Mercial using a wand or a staff and summoning daggers.
Magic Missile, I'd assume.
I was also thinking Magic Missile. I like that if it is Magic Missile, it's her preferred weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Magic
that's
stabs.
A cool piece of art, and also indicative of what might be direction.
Well, the Rogue was always the iconic character that used magic device in all editions of the game, so totally fits in.
Excited to see where they go.
So hopefully mechanically, but it's rare that we got to see an art.
True mm-hmm. enough. It does, and also it looks really cool. Does it look like there's almost like a painting flavor to this, to the new art that they're showing off?
I would say yes. Yeah, definitely, especially on the Fall of Plague Stone.
One thing that I am wondering is, one of the things they were talking about back in the playtest was that they were going to get rid of the idea of magic items as spells for a lot of them. I wonder if that's not true, wands.
Well, based on our conversation with Jason Bowman, feedback for that was so mixed that he flat out said not want us to make this change. That seemed feedback that it was mostly geared towards the Wand of Cure Light, but mm-hmm. it was basically they were trying to solve not a
right. Like, people were not married to what wands have always been. It was important that wands existed in the game based on the feedback, but what form they took could be anything.
Darren Caldemeyer wants us to know there's 70 mil Paizo.
Awesome. Thank you, Darren Caldemeyer, the official PaizoCon countdown correspondent of No Direction.
Also, Luis has showed up. Luis, hello.
Hey, Luis!
Since we've got two Paizo employees in chat, though, Luis, Adam, if there's anything we failed to bring up before we wrap things up, what have we missed that we should be keeping in mind? Only say so if you are confident it was already in.
Yeah, please do not get yourselves into trouble. Especially you two. We really, really, really like you two.
I mean, we like a lot of them.
I know we do. Especially, yeah, well, Luis is one of us. So, yes. Yeah.
One of us. One of us.
Luis is part of the No Direction Network. Oh,
so,
man.
While we wait for them to chime in, we missed.
Well, what did you think? What do you think about, how do you feel about this being the opening broadside of second edition compared to previous launches?
I think it's strong. I think that the size of the books I am surprised by, because I always got the impression Paizo regretted the size of the core rulebook.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm surprised that it wasn't like, here's two smaller core rulebooks, maybe one is the options, but here's a deluxe version that combines them. No, they just flat out went with bigger than the last core rulebook.
Well, even more, we have Eric Mona on recording several times at PaizoCon and afterwards that the one rule was the new core rulebook could not be any bigger than the first edition core rulebook. Like, that was the top
printing
size.
Technology advance.
And yeah, just blow that out the water.
There is some concern, just thinking back to the spine issues they had with the Starfinder core rule. Mm-hmm. If they are doing cutting edge technology and mm-hmm. it's not proven, this is pure speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we don't have the spine issues with core rulebook Pathfinder, yeah. because that put a dark cloud over the Starfinder launch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. especially because it was the ones that had the bit worse problem were the collector's edition ones, the big expensive leather cover ones. But at least to their credit, the playtest books did not have that spine problem when they were released. So hopefully that fixed it. But we also know that the playtest books were not printed in China.
They weren't?
No,
we
they
probably
aren't.
Knew that.
They were printed in Canada.
Hey, look at us.
Look at us. We made it.
It's on the it's in the book.
I am optimistic about this launch. I think it looks great. I feel like in terms of what to put out, this hits all of the nails on the heads of my list of, hey, this edition needs this to be successful. So right now I'm just at the point where I'm waiting to see what's in those two big rule books, but I'm ready to call this a successful launch already.
Well, like with Starfinder and even with Pathfinder, when it it launched, it was a whole lot of, yay, I've got the book in my hand, now we can spend a month or two prepping and getting ready to play while we wait for the rest of the game to come out, which happened with First Edition, which happened with Starfinder. With this launch lineup, I can be ready to get my campaign, like my 10-year-long Pathfinder campaign, converted to second edition and ready to go the day I get back from the con. And that makes me happy to knowing.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So Luis did come back with, he says that Eric Mona mentioned in the product thread that none of the scheduled books in the line are soft cover. Was it full of 64 pages?
Wait a minute. They call out...
64-page soft cover adventure. Eric Mona is a liar.
No, don't say that word out loud.
All right. Sorry. Eric is a liar.
There might be something he's talking about. There must be some version of that sentence that makes sense. Because they do call out that the Fall Who Plays Stone and Age of Ashes are soft cover in their descriptions. Unless that's incorrect.
Luis clarified and said that none of the books in the world...
Oh, ever.
That's what he said.
Schedule.
But still, that's big. The campaign setting line...
for us to speculate on what's going to happen to the campaign setting line and the player...
The player companion line, it's not even mentioned in any of the opening salvo. And there was player companion products that launched with First Edition. Most Adventurer's Armory, the best-selling player's companion book ever, was a launch product. If players' campaigns were quarterly and hardcover, that would count. That would line up with a page count of this hardcover world guide.
Are you suggesting there will be a 30-some-odd page hardcover every quarter instead of buy my smaller softcover books?
That would work.
It's true.
I guess you guys will have to wrangle Eric Mono and get it out of him.
We will. The Unfortunate Pumpkin says Companion is discontinued. They say it with some authority. I don't know who you are, Unfortunate Pumpkin. where did you hear that? What is your source?
That's such a trippy... I don't know who you are.
Well, player focused books. If smaller, more frequent player focused books would be an interesting way to direction to change things.
Definitely.
If whether it's called companion or just role playing game, especially like the companion rule books don't make a lot of sense in a world where that branding doesn't make sense in a world where rule setting are married.
You know where setting. You can't say in a world without me.
We'll say it in a world where the setting
in a world
and
setting.
Yeah, the player companion brand doesn't work.
So I've just been linked to subscription question that addresses this, that the campaign setting line and the player companion line are being merged into a new line called World.
Oh, okay. And the world, they did call out that the world guide book has player rules. They specifically called that out in that release. A quarterly release, like I don't know if it's really scheduled, but a quarterly release of 136-page books that are hardcover, I can dig that. I can totally dig that.
And that is in our... Also pointing out that everything that was just linked to me, they had... Adam Daigle says, one thing he's super stoked about is that we can actually talk about the new setting in the core rule.
Yay!
Yeah.
I know that you are less yay, Ryan, but I am yay.
I know.
I think, you know what? Like, if they keep to what Starfinder has done post-core rulebook, I think it'll... Like, a lot of Starfinder post-core rulebook has, like, rules sprinkled in the descriptive text for, like, aliens and the alien archives, and sometimes in, like, the weapon descriptions where, like, this is the company that makes these weapons. But they don't really go overboard, like, big core rules.
I just wish Ryan not of this hobby by having to work through campaign setting stuff, clogging up all of the rule stuff that was inspiring.
But do you know what other game has married its setting and rules, Ryan?
Not a game I'm playing.
No, not 5th edition. Yep. Like, I don't know.
4th edition did it too. It was trying to make all the campaign settings under one world. And
the points of light setting. Yeah.
There you go.
So hey, honestly, there was a lot. Time. That was a good idea. Like, not making it a setting, but that whole concept of points of light and as a pitch concept for adventuring was really cool. That's one of the things I really liked about 4th edition.
So, I don't know if you guys got to look at this subscription thing that just got linked, but did you see that it says that Pathfinder cards got turned to Pathfinder accessories, and like all of those accessories got put under the one encryption line.
That's what they did for Starfinder, so I was expecting that.
Official capacity. We just like looked at that stuff and said, that's a bunch of accessories. So, good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's branding. Yeah. You did it.
I guess I'm going to get a combat pad after all.
Oh, yeah. How are your subscriptions going forward?
Everything. Why not? Like, the only thing that not minis, because I can't afford $400 a month in minis.
Does this FAQ say anything about the PDFs that used to be free PDFs? What sweet subscription?
I do not see any information about that changing. So I would imagine it's staying the same because it's the FAQ talks about like what different types of changes.
Yeah, I hope that stay the same. And they also haven't mentioned the price point of the core rulebook PDFs, but again, I don't see that changing considering they kept that going through with Starfinder 2. And a lot of this, I know that a lot of the changes they're announcing are changes they did that are things Starfinder does. This is exactly how Starfinder is handling its situation. It has the smaller merged rulebook, hardcover rulebooks. It doesn't have soft covers. It has an accessories line.
Apparently this is actually something. So Alenia G says that Eric said in the thread they haven't made final decisions and avoided answering about the PDFs. So the fact that PDFs aren't mentioned anywhere on this on the product pages we just discussed or in this FAQ, that's deliberate. That is something that's been deliberately left off.
I would be a very grumpy person if that changes for the worse. Free PDFs is one of the reasons I do subscribe, as opposed to supporting my local game store, which would be my other choice, which would be a motivation for them to do it, because game stores have been getting onto have since the launch of the subscription line gotten onto them for that.
I kind of would like it if Core Rulebooks had like some sort of way that like the company could validate that you bought this book from them and that get the PDF. At least when I was at Gen Con last year and I bought Blades in the Dark, they actually were like, here's a business card, you could use this to get it, and it was very nice.
There's a bad version of this where they go the companion app with the subscription model that 5th edition went with that cost extra, and then they're not PDFs and you have to have special apps to read it. Oh, please, not that. That would be a huge turnoff for me entirely.
Well, it's pure speculation.
Yeah.
Specifically, no, they haven't made a decision.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just sure looking at the obvious avenues that have been done before is all I'm speculating on.
I'm sure that big consumer debate that's going on with Bullsun debundle this whole situation.
What is that besides the fact that it's a gigantic expensive box?
So basically, you can't get the PDFs for the Invisible Sun to buy that giant.
Okay.
Like, they're only available for that, like, $100.
$250.
There you go. That's.
Speaking of boxes, there was a podcast that announced there would be a beginner box for second edition early into the game's launch, which was then, like, they got that information from Paizo. They've now taken back that announcement. So the fact that it's not part of the product launch mentioned a beginner box. So if anyone's ever heard anything about a second edition beginner box, there is a line of where that announcement came from and why it's not being talked about anymore. I don't expect a beginner box right off the bat.
There was a version of that it might have been a miscommunication about the Starfinder beginner box, which is launching right about now and would have been previewing about the same time that announcement went out.
And the Starfinder beginner box came out 2 years after the core rulebook, which I think is the right amount of time to wait. Because by then, the amount of products in the catalog has expanded, and the amount of time to see where people are that are new to the game are actually tripping up, and what needs to be addressed.
Right. And any errata that would have to be applied to it.
Yeah. That's actually exactly why I think that putting out a beginner box is a bad idea. Ryan hit it on the head, just because like it's very bold to assume that you know exactly what other people are going to trip up about you.
I mean, the other option is you do like previous editions of Dungeons & Dragons has. All previous editions of Dungeons & Dragons has had day and date beginner boxes, and they are mostly considered trash. The third edition beginner box is the adventure is so bad it's laughable. Like it is comically bad, and the construction of it falls apart with a heavy breath. It's super thin too, and I love it. I have such fond memories of this piece of junk. Then the 3.5 beginner box was amazing. Like, it was such a humongous value for it, because you got a freaking black dragon miniature, you got like a dozen fully painted, no, you got like close to 30 fully painted miniatures, you got like cardstock thick dungeon tiles that worked with the dungeon tile line, and like soft cover book, you got a full 3.5 player's handbook was in that, in addition to the starter rules. It was a glorious product.
I've never heard you talk so highly about a 3.5 product.
I love 3.5. Oh my gosh.
I've never heard you
I have the, I have I have the 3.5 illuminated logo hanging in my bedroom right now, and that will never come down. And I have been offered close to $1,000 for that thing, and it is never leaving.
Wow.
I love 3.5.
People are talking about the 5th edition starter set. They're talking about it complimentary. Do you have any opinions on that?
I hear good things from the 5th edition starter set, actually. So I'm sorry for saying all of them are garbage. Except for the one thing about the 5th edition starter set is the Riser of Lies.
Go on.
The 5th edition starter set is a very good product, okay? You can download some version of it, too. It's got a fairly decent adventure in it, but it's, like, only a few levels compared to Pathfinder that gives you 1 through 5. And the books in it are very thin little books, okay? And the material in there is, like, a thin map, a thin books, some dice and stuff. And then the box itself is as thick as the Pathfinder Beginner Box, but two-thirds of that box is just a cardboard riser that supports them, so it never needed to be that thick.
That sounds shady.
Well, it's a common practice for products like that.
A common shady.
It needs to fit in with the other board games on shelves, because that's where you slot something like that.
It's like when you open your bag of potato chips and you realize that bag is only one-third full.
So you don't have broken chips.
They're nice and crispy.
But it's a lie.
No, it's a purpose. It has the printed ounce of the thing on the cover.
It might be a white lie, but it's still a lie.
There's no part of the 5th edition box that says we only have 4.2 ounces of book in here.
It's still a lie, Param.
Nah. Actually, I don't want to talk down. I don't want to criticize 5th edition at all. Like, it's not the game for me, but it's a really good quality game, and they put out quality legs for it, and they got a good team working on it.
All right. Daigle has leaving chat. I think we've drifted from the topic of this episode. I think we're ready to
wrap. All righty. We'll wrap things up right after this. Wrap-ups and chatter. Wrap-ups and chatter. Wrap-ups. Wrap-ups and chatter. And we're back.
Thank you for joining us for this special edition of No Direction, No Direction Network's Pathfinder News Review Pod. Before we go, does anyone have any shout-outs?
Oh, I don't have any shout-outs. Alex, do you got any shout-outs? I wasn't planning on this episode existing.
I'm going to be on our new Actual Play podcast that you guys announced last episode.
Yes, the new Actual Play podcast, Stellar! A Starfinder Actual Play podcast where we'll be playing through the Aeon Thrones. We've got Vanessa Hoskins that's going to be our GM. I'm playing, Alex is playing, James is playing, Lauren from the network is playing, as is Pazos Amanda Hammond! She's playing! We have ridiculous crew of misfits and brigands.
I already have my name, race, class, general background, and general backstory.
What is it? What is it? Say it. You can say it now.
I am playing Shivi, a Skittermander biohacker with the, what was my theme? Ace pilot. Mm. I get to drive our ship. I don't know why they're letting me drive our ship, but they're letting me. So I'm sure that they're not going to regret this.
Well, most pilots have two arms. You have six. That must make you three times the pilot. Well,
have you ever seen Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy? There's like an episode where like the spider Jeff is driving and he goes, it's extra safe for me to drive because I can have hands at 10 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 5 o'clock. That's going to be my Skittermander. And I'm sure that I'll use that joke at least once. I'm really excited. Vanessa actually let me write a custom field of study just for Shivi. So I'm really excited. I'm going to have the biomedicine field of study, which we'll have to say.
Several members of the cast are playing playtest classes that we will transition over to comm classes when that book gets released.
We even have a major third party option. I'm really excited how weird our party is. I don't think you see that. It's usually all like officials.
I will be playing. I don't have names. I'm not as fully developed as Alex's character because I've just been so busy. So crazy.
But I cheated. I did a survey to help.
Yeah, you totally cheated and got the audience to help with that.
Yeah. I mean, if we'll talk about it later, but if you're our insider or our backers, sometimes we can, but yeah. I'm sure someone will pitch it later.
Our insiders specifically have known about this for weeks.
Yeah. Well.
And I will be playing a Technomancer who is an uplifted bear.
We have the best.
And bank robber.
What?
Good things about the uplifted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the uplifted bear is like an amazingly good race. Like, just in terms of traits, flavor, everything about it is.
They're telepathic. They're telepathic bears. And they're just bears. They're not like bear people. They're just bears that have been awoken, and they, that's a species.
They have a ability where they can charge with no penalties just because they're bears. It's great.
Are you going to stop them? No. You're going to get out of the way of that bear.
They've got a 40-foot movement speed. It's they're so good. They have penalties to offset it, but like
the worst part is I'm large and I don't get any of the benefits for being large. So I'm just going to be squeezing through spaceship corridors, getting the pilot seat or something. My fur is just sticking out the airlock.
Do you know what's great though? You're big enough that I can ride you.
Oh my gosh, that is true.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. Great. Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I'm going to outfit you with like a rig, and I'll take ranks in survival, and we'll make it work.
If I got power armor.
I think Param now has a plan. I'm sorry, I missed what you said, Ryan. Can you say that again?
Oh, I just pictured you forehand through his fur.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So the thing that I found, I'm not going to say it because I want the audience to see the silliness that I came up with for this build before I actually tell you about it.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun.
I actually wrote this up as an iconic design, and I was going to share it, and I was like, I can't. I need them to see me do it before I share it. They need to watch what I do with this biohack. Literally, I messaged, I work with Owen on a lot of projects. So, like, I messaged Owen. I was like, can I do this thing? I was like, is this legal from a rules perspective? He's like, it looks right as written. You're going to have to beg your GM, though. So I begged Vanessa, and Vanessa said yes. Vanessa is a very kind overlord. She's amazing. I can't wait for you guys to see
When you told me about that, I was just like, count down to Loretta in 5, 4, 3, 2.
No, it's not OP, I swear. It's just so
It isn't OP. It's just interesting. You wait till y'all see it. It's going to be blast. Check it out. It's going to be stellar. It's going to be starting in a month or two on No Direction. Get ready. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Speaking of just programming, so this was supposed to be a Beyond episode.
Yes.
Next week, we've already got a guest lined up for our No Direction Prime episode. Right.
Say who it is. We can say.
Sure, it's Ron Lundin. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the first time on the show. Mm-hmm. When's the next Beyond then? Are you making up this episode sometime later this week, or are you waiting until the 20th?
We will need to decide because there's other things I need to talk to the network about. There's other interview opportunities that we don't have time for that we might have to make time for.
Yeah. Ooh. And we also have, we actually had our guests for Beyond already planned for not tonight, but
two weeks from tonight. Yeah. We're going to have Justin Sutter is going to be on the show. James Sutter. Sorry.
Oh God, we
the I'm James sorry. Justins Johns of Paizo with S names. It is hard. You all make it very hard. But James Sutter, and I apologize, James, you're one of my favorite people. You write such good books. He's you helped design a wonderful game. Starfinder is love. We love it. Yeah, so we've got...
And that is a cool interview because he's left the company, but he's still working on the brand, and it'll be cool catching up with him. Yeah.
He was totally on board for the episode, too. We didn't come up with that. That was an interview that was pitched us, and we were super happy to get it. And that's not the interview I'm talking about. There's other things in the works.
Do I know the interview you're talking about?
No, because it happened last night, and I haven't had a chance to even talk to Alex about it. But there are other major Starfinder projects getting a lot of press right now that might need some attention from the Starfinder your podcast.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to have that team on No Direction any form. That the fact that that game exists is as big a selling as it is and gets warped into so many things. I would love to have the Pony Finder team on the network for an interview sometime.
All right, you know what? Before second edition comes out,
Pony Finder people, please get in touch, or we'll get in touch with you. We want to have that interview.
You guys better take them up on this. Most third party publishers have to hunt these two down to get in.
I mean, they don't put a whole lot of effort into hunting us down. We're right here. No direction at hotmail.com.
I mean, we have had to turn down more interviews than we like over the past couple of years as we kept getting booked up by Paizo people, but hey, we totally want third edition I would love to have some third edition content on the show sometime. That would be a nice throwback.
Listen, just because they hunt you with all the ferocity of the grandma from the Gingerbread Man song doesn't mean that they're not hunting you. I'm sorry, guys. My joke game is really on point. I am so excited for all these new products. Like, I'm just, like, giddy, and my humor is flowing very easily.
All right, everyone. I think we're running the tank dry, though.
Yeah. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about No Direction?
Well, you can go to our webpage at nodirectionpodcast.com, where you will find all of our podcasts, as well as our excellent blog content. There is content almost every single day put up at nodirectionpodcast.com. Also, you can find us on our Discord channel there if you want to have the most cool and chill community in Pathfinder, Starfinder, and adjacency. Go ahead and check that out. It's a great place to...
Did that blow up tonight?
Oh my gosh, that thing is just going crazy. And it is a toxic-free community. We enforce that very hardcore. Mm-hmm. If you want a place to hang out and just talk about Pathfinder, Starfinder, anime, giant robots, video game,
Overwatch.
It is totally like random adjacency and various nerd things. Geek Together is a thing that exists, so all nerd things are legal there. It's a great place to hang out. You'll get to chat with all the fans. All the staff are hanging out on there. Well, almost all the staff. Some of us are, there are some staff that are more busy than others, but almost all the staff is hanging out there and are joining in on the conversation. So if you want to hang out with us anytime during the week, it's a great place to be. You can find the link to join our Discord at nodirectionpodcast.com on the right bar. Also, Ryan, why don't you tell them about our Patreon and how it makes things like this possible?
Sure. If you go to nodirectionpodcast.com, there's also a link to our Patreon, or you can go directly to patreon.com/nodirection, where you can throw a couple of dollars our way, or $5 will get you the unconditioned cards, which I'm very late on, but they are coming.
At least the art's out there.
Yes. Little bits of the art has been revealed to the backers and insiders. That's something that I'm happy with. We have our backer insider channel, and we've been using those more frequently. But yeah, generally, if you are happy with us, with being able to offer you more more coverage of Paizo, Pathfinder, and taking the time to launch new projects like Stellar, Continuing Adventurous, all these things that we've just grown and are offering now, the money that we get from Patreon really makes that possible. It makes us keep up with our equipment needs possible, software needs, all of those things. So check out patreon.com/nodirection. If you can spare a few dollars every month or so, we'd really appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Ryan Costello.
And I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
And I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And if you want to find the path, you need no direction.
Bye, guys.